This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks, and this is the Black Armband Edition. For those of us in the Zach Bolduc fan club, and I was among the ranking officers of that club, Matt, this was, but Blues general manager Doug Armstrong did what he needed to do. He got younger on the blue line, went out and found a 200-foot forward, added a little more depth to replace Radek Foxa. So all in all, very busy, but relatively low profile offseason so far for Armstrong.
Yeah, it was a couple days in July that pretty much delivered on what Armstrong said he would do, right? He said, you know what, we're not going to trade a young player for an old player with 1 year of term. We're not going to get a guy and use our first round pick for a guy who's got 1 or 2 years left till UFA. We're going to trade from a position of strength and, fortify one that needs fortifying. We always want a second line center, but so do a lot of other teams. And, he basically did that. Like the rhetoric kind of matched what the execution was for Doug Armstrong and, getting Logan Mailloux from Montreal, trading Zach Bolduc to the Canadiens, signing Pugh Suter yesterday, and then signing Nick Bjugstad as kind of a ratified replacement. So I think after July 1st, you would have looked at the roster and said, I don't know if they got better. But now when you look at Suter's addition, what he was able to do in Vancouver last year and where it kind of slots out of the rest of the lineup, you look at it and say, yeah, I mean, I think there is probably a marginal improvement made, and they're going to count on a lot of internal growth still. So I think everything that he talked about, sticking to the plan, not making the big rash moves. All these are short-term moves besides Mailloux. Mailloux's 22 years old, but Suter's a two-year deal. Bjugstad's a two-year deal. It still lines up with where they're at as a franchise, as an organization with their young players.
Yeah, let's start on the blue line. This has been a persistent topic, even preceding your arrival in the STL, about an aging defensive core and the need to infuse youth. They draft five guys in a two-year period to try to create a future. Doug makes the brilliant move to bring in Broberg and Holloway, and Broberg certainly added some fresh legs to that group, sort of filled the Torrey Krug void with Cam Fowler and created a bit of an upgrade there. But there was still work to be done, and this was an opportunity to go to a team that had a lot of young D and a guy that, size, some upside, some established production in the American League, work to do on the defensive side, but a guy who's had some personal growth. I thought that was basically a great hockey trade, with Canadians getting potentially a good top six forward for them for the long haul. I think Bolduc could eventually be that guy, and the Blues filled a need that they needed sooner than later to keep that youth coming on the blue line.
Yeah, and I think if you sat down Doug Armstrong, you asked him about all the different kinds of trades in the hockey world, right? There's trading picks to move up. There's salary cap dumps. There's rentals at the trade deadline. And then there's hockey trades. I think if you asked him and say, hey, which category is your favorite trade to do? He seems to love his hockey trades, right? Where it's just, you have this, I have this, we're a match, let's get it done. And that's basically what this boiled down to, is a 22-year-old winger in Zach Bolduc, who has about 90 more games of NHL experience, for a 22-year-old defenseman who has been an AHL All-Star twice, who was on the AHL All-Prospects team this past year. So one of those situations where the Blues found Bolduc expendable because of the depth that they had on the wing. I think both in the NHL and in the pipeline, to be quite honest, when you look at Buchnevich, Kyrou, Snuderud, and Holloway. Those are your top four wingers right there. And the Blues have talked about wanting to have three storylines, and you can say, hey, well, Boldrup would fit on a third storyline. He had 19 goals last year. He was great on the power play. So you put all that together, and it kind of adds up to needing some youth on that blue line, right? I think before the draft last year, when they took Juracek and Ralph and Fisher, there was a big need on defense for young defenders, right? But as you mentioned, they added those three guys who are now a year older. They go out and get Broberg, who's 24 years old, and they get Mayhew, who's 22. And not saying that all five of them will hit, but I think we already know what Broberg is. And the other four, if you get two of them to hit and you fill in the rest of it with free agents, you're going to be looking okay, right? So the fact that they've been able to kind of redo their future of the defense corps is admirable. And then you throw Theo Lindstein in there as well from the 2023 draft, who's coming over the North America. You have a decent set of defensemen there. Whereas you looked up front and you had those four wingers that I talked about, plus you have, Stenberg, who's, going to have a full season in the AHL this year. You have Carboneau, who you just drafted. You get some other depth guys on the wing, but they have a lot of wingers both now and in the future, and the Mayhew trade kind of solidifies what they have on defense, especially him being right-handed.
Yeah, as Doug pointed out ahead of all of this, well, centers are hard to find, D-men are hard to find, wingers easier to find, so therefore also more expendable. And I guess if you're going to get a call from the front office, surprise phone call, and you find out you've been traded, then you find out where you've been traded. I mean, I'm sure Zach was trying to act, hurt and disappointed, but man, as long as he stays grounded. Him going to Montreal, knowing his, he's a, he's just a great personality, at least for the media standpoint. So I think he can handle that. I just hope he stays grounded. If he can stay grounded, keep working, keep grinding away, he could be a heck of a player. That could be an amazing setup for him. Though the media will love him up there. Again, if he can stay grounded, do the work, and become a player.
Yeah, I think it kind of cuts both ways, being a Quebec native in Montreal playing for the Canadiens. Obviously, he speaks French, and it's one of the things that stands out to me every time, we go to Ottawa or to Montreal. You just kind of look around the room and you say, "Okay, who speaks French here?" And then you'll see the cameras around them because, I mean, it's their native language, right? So last year it was funny. It was, Matthew Joseph and PO was on the team at the time. Texier was there. They had Bolduc. Montgomery had not shown up yet. Montgomery does speak French. He's from Montreal. But Claude Julien was there. Claude Julien speaks French. So, the Montreal media had a lot of Blues players to go and chat with. And even thinking before, they had, Marco Scandella, who's from Montreal, and Sammy Blais spoke French. So, the French media loves a French speaker. So I think that's the good part about it. I think he'll connect with the fan base pretty well, just being a French speaker and being native to the area. But that also means expectations will be raised for him in Montreal, right? He's going to be looked at as a 19 goal scorer. Where can you go from there? Can you be a second line winger on the team that has a ton of scoring talent, right? When you look at Caulfield and Demidov on the way, and they already have Suzuki, and we Gallagher is still kicking. Like, they have some good talent there. They got some good young talent. We saw what they did on the back end, why Mayhew was expendable with the addition of Dobson, when they have Reinbacher already there. So they have a good amount of talent. And Bolduc, I think he made some strides this year. I think his physicality picked up a lot in the second half. Obviously, the goal scoring did. He found his spot on the power play. He looked really at home in that bumper spot in the middle. And then, I think it's the discipline aspect too. He took some dumb penalties. He kind of let the running around and chasing physicality get in the way a little bit, and took some dumb penalties in the playoffs. So, as he matures, that'll all come with it. And I think that's also a bet that the Blues have to make when they look at dealing him away. They say, well, where is he now? Where is he going? Was his production a matter of just producing a lot on the power play, facing lesser competition at even strength, having insulated minutes? How much of it was that? And how much of it was, having a shooting percentage around 16? What were the factors, and how high can he go? How does that relate to a 22-year-old right-handed defenseman? And I think those are some of the things that they consider. I also think these are both guys drafted in 2021, right? Obviously, Mayu had his deal in 2021 where, he was charged in Sweden for taking a photo of a woman during a sexual act and sharing it. He paid a fine in Sweden. He asked teams not to draft him, and the Canadians did anyway. And so when we spoke to Doug Armstrong the other day, he was asked whether Mayu was on his radar in 2021. And he said, well, he asked not to be drafted, so we didn't draft him. And, just reading between the lines, this is just me inferring. I don't want this to sound like this is what Doug Armstrong said, because he didn't. But I wonder how highly they had Mayu in the 21 draft. If he was, eligible is not the correct word, but if he was on their draft board, would he have been high enough to be picked at 17 where Bolduc went? I don't know. And in the years since then, Mayu went through a program in the OHL that, he was suspended for 4 months in the OHL when he came back. He came, did a program there, therapy, counseling sessions, and he returned to the ice in the OHL. He did some programs with the Canadians, I think around consent and respect. And then he was cleared by Gary Bettman. So in the 4 years since the draft, 5 years almost since the incident, there's been some things that he's been asked to do and has done, but it was still, the first thing that people think about when they think about his name, right? So all those factors considered, I wonder how highly the Blues did have him in 21, and if they would have taken him there in that spot.
Yeah, and a cynical way of looking at it, that all the misfortune that he created for himself, had he not done that, yeah, he wouldn't have been available 31st overall, or at the end of the first round, whatever that wherever he went there, and he would have been picked higher, and he would have been come in as a much higher profile prospect. And if he'd gone to a different team and he hadn't had any baggage, maybe he would have made it to the NHL sooner. Who knows? But long story short, it could be an optimal pickup. And coming to St. Louis, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some questions, but it'll move on. And this is not, in terms of a hysterical markets, St. Louis ranks pretty low on that. So he'll be able to just kind of do his thing. And I think the expectations will be because they have their top four set and two other younger D-men that they want to get minutes for. I think they want him to play this year and have an impact, but I don't know that there's going to be an unrealistic expectation. He's part of the seven, and as a result of that, the flip side of that is that Nick Leddy goes on waivers, and one way or another, it appears that will be the end of the Nick Leddy era.
Yeah, we'll find out in a couple hours whether he gets claimed on waivers or not. But it's a curious kind of timing for waivers. I mean, this is a situation where he still does have half the lead on a no trade list, right? So if there is a destination that's interested in Leddy at this $4 million price point, the Blues could put him on waivers, that team can claim him, and then that's it. Like, Leddy doesn't have any recourse there. The other side is if he doesn't get claimed and it becomes apparent that the Blues can get him through waivers in the preseason, which they will have to do again in order to send him to the AHL. If it's apparent to him that no team wants him, that he'll be sent to the AHL, he can choose to go the Brandon Saad route and say, hey, I don't want to go to the AHL. I'd be much more interested in terminating my contract right now, signing for a cheaper deal elsewhere and doing that. He is have a $4 million cap hit. He's due $3 million in salary. So if the contract termination does happen, he would be forfeiting $3 million in salary, part of which he would recoup in signing a cheaper deal elsewhere. And it's not, I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but I'm saying it is one of the avenues that could ha happen, depending on what we see at 11 o'clock this morning. So, yeah, I mean, the one thing that I kind of took away from talking to Doug on July 1st about the Mayhew trade was that he expected him to be in St. Louis. I think there was a little bit of question whether they wanted to develop him just a touch more in the AHL, give him some time in the organization, whatever. But I think you see what they gave up for him, and you see his past in the AHL, and they say that he's ready. And so that means that they already had 7. Mayhew would make 8, and Letty, given his, I think, combination of age, injury history last year, a potential role this year, cap hit, and I guess offensive upside too. I think all of that maybe contributed to him being the guy on waivers. And I say all that just because I know some fans are probably wondering, well, why wasn't it Justin Faulk or something? He still has a role on a power play. He had a good partner last year in Philip Roberg. They had formed a good pairing at times, where they were the top pairing. And so I think you look at Letty, and they probably viewed Tucker as a better third pair option than Nick Letty at $4 million and taking up a roster spot.
Yeah, and you look at as far as Nick goes, a couple things. One, Brandon Saad went down this route, as you noted, and he got to go to pick his spot, and Vegas was the spot, and then he gets another kick at the Vegas can. He stays there. He's on a great team in a great setting, and he signs for another couple mil, and so he did his. He's trying to play the longer game too, Brandon, in terms of, okay, I want to keep playing. And it'd be nice to be able to pick my spot and keep my career going. And maybe I've made some money, and now it's the time to look at environment, future opportunity, all those things. Got to bet on himself to a degree, and I think his move generally paid off. He gave up some money, but may have ex put himself in a good situation. Letty may look at that the same way. And frankly, when you look at some of the D-men, what they were getting, the Dumoulins and the CeCe's getting long-term deals for this sort of money. With Ken Holland doing his working his magic, doing what he did in Detroit, doing what he did in Edmonton. What the hell's going on there? But anyways, he goes and gets those guys. There are a lot of guys in that $3-4 million range who do what Nick Leddy does, if Nick Leddy's healthy and if Nick Leddy can do what he did the year before for the Blues.
Yeah, and it's like this type of market is where the Panthers have made their moves, right? Like, I'm not saying that Nick Leddy is a Florida Panther, but I'm just saying, when Ekman-Larsson gets bought out, signs a cheaper short-term deal in Florida. When Nate Schmidt gets bought out, signs a cheaper short-term deal in Florida. I think, they just went out and got Jeff Petrie at a cheap short-term deal. Like, this is what they do in Florida. They look for a third pair defenseman. They let their current ones go. They find cheaper veterans on the market. And so, like, knowing that's what Florida has done, I would imagine other teams look at that and say, hey, like, wonder if this is a market inefficiency that we can exploit, where they have buyouts or contract terminations, cheaper veterans looking to play for less on a winning team. I wonder if that's something that maybe Nick Leddy looks at if they go down this route.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, and I think it, or you could decide we're going to throw big money over long term at aging turnstiles to stick out on our blue line and see what happens, see if that makes us better, which is what the Kings did.
Yeah.
I don't get it, but that's their problem. I mean, Gavrikov, the Rangers paid a premium, but they know what they're getting in the player and they know his role and, top four guy on a team that has trying to turn things around defensively. But to replace him with a couple of guys that, were not assets in their previous stop necessarily, and certainly at those prices. But that's their problem. All right, moving on to a suitor. I thought getting him for 2 years. This is a handy guy. He's not going to score 25 goals. I mean, that happened because Vancouver's was a house fire, and everything was ablaze. And he got all of a sudden at the end of the year, he's found himself in a primary role. He's going to be a 30, 35 point guy, but he's really a handy player. And he's a little overpriced where he is on his term, but what you would consider overpriced before this market. But 2 years, and he's a handy guy. He can play in the middle on your third line. He can play on the wing if he gets a Dvorsky comes along. He can kill penalties. Seems like he has good underlying metrics. Not a fast skater, not super creative, but can score. Knows what to do out there. Seems like a good fit.
Yeah, I think this was a great addition for the Blues, as I look at it right now. I think we all looked at the centers on the free agent market, and I think most people would have put, Granlund first, Suter second, and then, whether it's Dvorak or Roslovic or, whoever after that. I think there was a very clear top two on the free agent market. And Mikael Granlund, I mean, good for him, got 3 years, $7 million in Anaheim. And it was a situation where, I liked looking at some of the contract projections that some of these analytics sites make, just to see what's out there and see what actually ends up happening. And I was reminded of, Doug Armstrong's soliloquy last week about where this market's going right now. And he says, take what they're projected to give or projected to get. And this one site, AFP Analytics, had Granlund at 2 years and $5 million. And sorry, so take that, add 20% to the AAV, and that's easy math. That's $1 million. So you add it, it'd be $6 million. Add another year to the term. All right, so now we're at 3 years and $6 million, and that gives him the right to say no to you. And I was like, oh yeah, I mean that adds up. If he said yes to three years and $7 million, 3 and 6 is no. And so I only mentioned that because in that same vein, this same site projected Suter, who's much younger. He's 29 years old. He's coming off a less impressive offensive season than Granlund, and has less of a track history, but has more utility, I think, in all around situations. They had him at 4 years and 5 mil, and the Blues got him in half that term, almost $1 million less than projected. So, yeah, as you mentioned, Gordo, I don't think he's going to be scoring 25 goals. I think he's pretty consistently in that 30 to 35 point range, which is okay for a third line center. I mean, he shot 18% last year. A lot of his goals are at even strength. Like, it's not like he's getting consistent production on the power play, and he sees some tougher minutes because he does have a good defensive background. He was the most used penalty killing forward on the Canucks. There were times last year after JT Miller was traded that he was a second line center behind Elias Pettersson. And you look at that and say, well, maybe Suter can play 2C in St. Louis. And then I think remember what Vancouver looked like
Exactly.
last year when they had Pugh Suter as a number two center. So I think given what he provides, a good addition that I think slots in as a third line center, but I think we'll see at times during the year when Jim Montgomery kind of shuffles things around, where sometimes you'll see him as a 2C. I think there were points last year where he was playing on the wing with Pettersson, so I wonder if he ever sees a little bit of time at wing. But really, a guy who's versatile, has good defensive numbers, has good penalty killing forward that can help the Blues.
It's funny, the before this market opened, Doug Armstrong was I would say eerily upbeat about being able to find that guy. He says he says I'll be able to, there'll be a 200 foot forward. He's pretty confident. Then you looked at the list of guys who were available and you think, okay, really? I don't know, man, it's pretty thin. Pretty, there isn't a ton there. And you saw us again, then you start seeing some guys get overpaid. Even a Dvorak on a 1 year deal got good dollars. So you're thinking, okay, but how's he going to do this? How's and then Bukestad's like, well, that really doesn't fill the need. It's he replaces Fox, it gives you some size, and he's got to be better than Sundqvist, I would imagine, next year. But just because Sonny's had so many injuries and he's been through so much. So you're thinking, okay, that really didn't fill it. Then he gets this deal. And like you say, just for 2 years, man, it's like, yeah, how did he know he was going to be able to do this? Or did he know? Or was he just a confident guy?
Yeah, it is we're going to talk to Dud later this morning, and one of the things that I'm curious is like, how did this happen? Like, I feel like there's so many teams looking for this center, that you would have thought that his market would have been a little bit higher, both in terms of dollar value and in terms of term. I think he's a guy who's coming off a career year. This might be his time to cash in on it. Would he be looking for a 4-year deal? And instead, he goes and, in a smaller way, bets on himself a little bit in a 2-year term, hoping that when the cap is also massive in 2 years, he can cash in again. But given his production in the past, it's not really a given that he gets back to 46 points. You know, like, this is not somewhere that he's been consistently. And so, good get by Doug Armstrong, just to kind of deepen the center position, lengthen the lineup a little bit, and provide a little bit more punch on the third line. I think the other thing that gets lost in this is that we're forgetting who Braden Schenn is. This guy, I think when you look back at his history and in this league, 2 years ago was basically his worst offensive season of his career, when in 23-24, first year as captain, the Blues missed the playoffs, and he has 20 goals and 26 assists. That's 46 points for his worst offensive year, like the one that we were all wondering, is he done? Like, that was his worst one. That was Suter's career year last year at 28 years old. Schenn was 4 years older when he put that horrible, in quotations, year together. And so I think we're forgetting who Braden Schenn is, what his history is, and how productive he can be as a second line center, particularly with Holloway and Kyrou on his wings. There are times in January and February where they looked like the top line on the Blues. So, as much as Suter will help deepen the middle six, deepen the lineup, I don't think he's taking that job from Braden Schenn quite yet. I mean, sure, Schenn is going to be another year older this year. He's going to turn 34 in August. Like, there are, in the way that he plays, it would not surprise anyone if there is more of a drop off. But at this point, I think we're forgetting who Braden Schenn is right now.
And yeah, forgetting how that line worked, which before I touch on the draft here, I wanted to hit on that. I mean, I obviously there was a window for Armstrong to trade Kyrou wherever he wanted. There are a lot of proposals out there on the interwebs, and all of them were stupid. I didn't see anything that made sense.
All of them, Dordo.
Well, yeah, even the optimistic ones. Well, put them in a package and get McDavid. Okay, sure. Surely the Senators will trade, Brady Tkachuk to St. Louis for him. Yeah, or well, Kirby Dach and Matheson and a draft pick. Like, well, Dach's barely held together with baling wire, and hopefully the young man can have a nice career, get it together. And Matheson, what do they do? They don't need another old defenseman, older. And some of these, well, just throw Byram in. Well, again, Byram's going to want all the money in the world, and I'm not sure that's what they're going to do for that spot. And who's going to replace the goals? So, anyways, he survives his last day without any sort of tr no trade protection, and I guess that's not a surprise. I mean, I'm sure was Doug listening, of course, but you trade him for Peterka, and there's a guy who didn't check anybody. He's an offensive player, and maybe you could make the argument that was a hockey trade. You could do that, but I don't know. I didn't see anything that made any sense, and the day passed and nothing happened.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it about two different topics multiple times here at the NetFront. And one is, I think that Jordan Kyrou, the player, provides something that not many Blues do themselves, and that's creating his own offense. When you look at Thomas and Buchnevich, they can help create offense for others, and at times create their own offense. But Kyrou is a guy who can do it on his own. And that's a skill that not many players on this team or in this league have. So I've been a believer in his game, despite the other parts of it, where, I think a few years ago we could look at some of the effort on the board, some of the effort defensively, and even some of the turnovers, and wonder where this trajectory goes. But I think last year answered a lot of that, where he was tracking back in the neutral zone hard consistently to recover pucks. He's never going to be that guy on the forecheck, but you could see him getting more into battles and being more responsible defensively. You saw some of that overall game round out, and he even got a Selke vote, huh? How about that? Would Jordan, did you see that coming? Did you think you would see the day where Jordan Cairo got a Selke vote?
I think I was somebody who had an appreciation for irony. Whether somebody just made
They
a
misread
clerical
it, huh?
error, but well, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's got a plus minus, but like Doug Armstrong would point out, well, yeah, look at, yeah, it's kind of the rising tide, ignore the plus minus because he was along for that ride. But anyways, yeah, it's and he's matured, and Armstrong noted, is it, how much higher can he go? We'll see. Can he go a little higher? Can he go a lot higher? But the reality is, at his age, at his production level, and his salary, he's outperformed his draft position by a lot, and now he's got a chance to outperform his salary slot. And it wouldn't take much, given the way the salary is going to be the next 2 years, the way the cap's going to go. So now, is he going to be a star? Is he going to take that next step like Robert Thomas did? I'd be a little surprised, but he's going to be a very good player. He falls into that category. And then what do you need a guy that can score off the rush and do those things. And, and besides, you're paying Armstrong a lot of money, or rather Montgomery a lot of money to coach. Gives him something to do, right?
Yeah, and I think, like, I mentioned two things I never even mentioned. I never got around to them. The two things: number one, Jordan Cairo, his contract, as you mentioned, is fantastic for his production, his age, and his cap hit. And number two, it's the GM's job to know what his players' value are. And this is the last chance for Doug Armstrong to know what his value is. And I think we can also go back to this Bolduc Mailloux trade, say a third line winger that's 22 years old got us a potential top four defenseman that's 22 years old. What does a 35 goal scorer get us? Does that get us a true number one defenseman that we could sign for $10 million? Because look, Kyrou's making 8.125. Like, does that math add up? So I think there, it's the philosophy would kind of fit the same thinking. Trade from a surplus of wingers to get help on defense. It's just the caliber would be a lot different than what we saw on the Bolduc Mailloux trade, right? So I think the Blues were within their rights to explore it and to check out what the market looks like, what they could get. Because if they could get a true number one defenseman, I think that's also a hockey trade that Doug Armstrong really looks at doing. So yeah, I'm knowing what Kyrou has brought to this team, and as you mentioned, where do those goals come from if he's not there? I think it was A, worth exploring what he's worth, and B, worth finding out over the next few years what he can bring to the St. Louis Blues on the ice.
Maybe Byram is that guy someday, trapped behind Darlene, trapped behind Owen Power. He wasn't they couldn't throw big money at him, nor could they give him the sort of power play time that he would need. And put that lack of track record and his previous injury history, I mean, maybe he's that guy Pittsburgh should get and build around. And but for the Blues, for Kyrou, yeah, it would have been that would have been a stretch where this trade was
Yeah.
not. This trade made sense. All right, last thing, we got to get to the draft. And it's in 3 years for sure, there will at least be, we know, Carboneau taking some pressure off of Jake Neighbors as a talker. We don't know if he will be a goal scorer at that point, if he'll be adding the physicality and the grit and go to the net, some of the elements that Jake brings. But he is a mature, talkative young man, and he'll be welcomed by the media, at least for that. Nothing else. I do like the pick. Most experts thought where the Blues got him, there's real value there.
Yeah, I mean, his introductory Zoom and this week at development camp, he's been a very pleasant fellow. I think sometimes when you have the picks from Quebec, you're not sure just how comfortable or confident they are in English. I mean, obviously they know English, but it's not their first language. They're not going to show all of the personality that they have. But he was very chatty, very talkative, very nice guy to talk to, and I think very confident too. He's the way that he plays and the way that he talks, very, very confident in his abilities to get to the dirty areas, go to the net, score some goals. And, I do put less and less stock into development camps these days, particularly this one for the Blues. In past years, they would have at least some sections of 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 or things like that. But, this camp where they don't have a lot of players in town. They have a lot of invites. They only are doing 3-on-3 scrimmages and skills work. It's not like you're going to be getting a lot of actual hockey played and hockey takeaways. But 3-on-3 does allow skill to show. And for my bet, the first 3 days, we're heading into the fourth one today, Justin Carboneau has been probably one of the best players on the ice. He's had two real highlight skill goals, making some moves, one dancing around a winger, admittedly, and then scoring, and then one a little spinorama yesterday. So he's had some skill work. He's had two really great outlet passes from his own zone yesterday. Again, at 3-on-3, a lot more open ice, very different, but you can see the skills are there. And you can see the confidence to make that and kind of throw his body around a little bit, even at a development camp in the summer as a against your future teammates. He's thrown around the body a little bit. So he's looked and sounded like a guy who wants to belong here. And I think the Blues have to be pleased with what they're seeing so far with Carboneau. And we'll see what it looks like in the future, whether he goes back to the QMJHL or whether he's going to go to Boston College. That can also dictate his path forward even this fall. If he's in juniors, he can come to training camp. He'll have a shot. But if he's in college, you see him whenever you see him, right? So we'll see what his path forward looks like, and we'll see how he adds to the winger depth in the future.
All right, last thing here on the net front, because Matt's got to get busy. Tax-free states, okay? Because you mentioned that you wanted to talk about this, and I wrote about it to a degree because Doug Armstrong tried to temper fans' enthusiasm and expectations by pointing out that the Blues are never going to be able to compete with certain teams for certain things. And one class of teams that the Blues can't compete against are very well-run teams that also happen to be in tax-free states. And we saw with the Mitch Marner play, it worked for Vegas. We saw with the re-signings, including it for some pretty good term in Florida to keep guys, to keep the band together. It's certainly an issue. And Gary Bettman's not ready to concede that it's a problem, but it is an issue.
See, now this is where I probably differ from you, Gordo. I think it is completely overblown. Completely overblown. I've been thinking about this for like the last month and a half as it entered the whole hockey universe and like, oh, Florida's back in it again. Tampa was in it before. Dallas is there. Vegas is there. All these teams in tax-free states. I think it's completely overblown. And I recognize, yes, I'm from Miami. I covered the Panthers previously. I covered the Stars. So I've like covered two teams that are in tax-free states, right? But here's my thing. It is an advantage. Absolutely 100% and undeniably an advantage. Yes. But every market has its advantages and disadvantages. Like we were just talking about Zach Bolduc and him going back to Montreal. You don't think that means a ton to him, a guy who can go back there and where playing that building every night where winning means so much in March, let alone May and June. Nothing against the Panthers, but it doesn't mean the same, right? The winning doesn't mean the same in Florida. That matters to some people. Weather matters to other people. So when you look at, Seattle, which is a tax-free state or in a tax-free state, maybe the weather matters to some people. Maybe it's proximity to home. Maybe it's magnitude of games and team in the market. Like other things matter more than just taxes. And taxes themselves in this situation tend to be overblown in terms of their magnitude, right? Variance, I guess. Because you're taxed on where you earn the money. So all these teams, they get taxed in 32 different markets, depending on where they play the games, So when the Blues spent a week in California, they paid a week of California taxes. And yes, they're still going to be the majority of their salary earned at their home base, playing games at home, practicing at home, all that stuff. I understand that. Same with signing bonuses. If your place of residence is Florida, you get that signing bonus, you'll get it tax-free. It all matters. I get it. But it's not like it's completely the entire salary. Boom. No state tax. And then also, Gordo, you can see I've been percolating on this, huh?
Yeah, well, but this by your standards, this is a rant now. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep going.
Yeah,
Well, you know I'm you call me young enough, but I'm also old enough to recognize that the Panthers were horrible. I really wanted to say some other things that would have, been maybe bleeped on our website, but they've been horrible for like 2.5 decades for, since their existence, basically. They went 20 years without winning a playoff series. 25 years? I was there just before Dale Talon went out and signed Anton Strahlman to a bad contract and Brett Connolly to a bad contract. And before that, Dave Bolin. They had to send their first round pick to Arizona to take on Dave Bolin's contract. I saw a video the other day of all of the old guys that they signed in free agency 1 year, and it was, Jose Theodore and Brian Campbell and Christopher Steed, Tomas Fleischmann, Tomas Kapetski, Scotty Upshaw. Like, these used to be the classes that the Panthers would get because they were horrible. They were losing. No one wanted to be there because there was no fans, there was no interest. They always lost, and it didn't matter that there was no state taxes. Right, but you get Bill Zito in here who ships out Strahlman, who had to, his surgery when he took over Florida was remarkable, getting rid of a bunch of bad contracts, including Strahlman, including Connolly, including Keith Yandel, who had another bad deal. Like, there were a ton of bad contracts handed out in Florida before Bill Zito got there, and now that he's competent, now that they're winning, you see guys taking less to be there, and I think you see the same thing in Dallas. You don't really see the same thing in Vegas. You don't see a lot of discounts in Vegas, but you see maybe you don't see them taking far less team-friendly deals like the Duchesnes or the Ekblads or Marchands, whatever those types. You see Marner taking 12 instead of 13. Sure. My whole point is that it matters. It's a factor, but to think that it's the only reason that these teams are winning is absolutely ludicrous. And that's all I got to say about it, Gordo. That's all I got.
So, back when JT was doing the podcast, I would launch into my whiner mode. Like, so you're saying that other teams are, oh, we're never gonna get more. There's a state tax in Nevada. We got a state tax. We're gonna settle for sooner. Oh, we're never gonna get these guys. Matthew Tkachuk, never gonna come here. Brady Tkachuk, oh. No. So that was the whining thing that I would
That
do
was
with
incredible,
JT.
Gordo.
So yeah, that was my my effort there. So anyways, well, that's been a great addition. I'm glad we got Matt fired up about something here.
Oh, I've
And you
been
saw
thinking
some
about it.
bad Panthers hockey, so you know what it's like to be in an empty arena in Sunrise, Florida with nobody caring. So
Yeah, I mean, that's still the case sometimes during the regular season, even after these cups, so.
and another thing, a reminder for everybody is that when we start talking numbers, Matt did study finance at a reputable university. Did not go to a state school like me, and did not get like 80 on his out of 200 points on his algebra exam at the State University here in Missouri. Actually went to Notre Dame, so we can count on him to give us good numbers. All right, so we got to let Matt get back to work. For Matt DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been NetFront Presence. A reminder that you can get all of our extra content in our digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, all the cool stuff. We do a lot of video, podcast, a lot of extra words, many more extra words, all of that available. Keep supporting local journalism. Until next time, for Matt, I'm Jeff. See ya.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.